Hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I'm Sean.
I'm Justin.
And Justin's got a big smile on his face while he's about to open up his Sedin water bottle.
Number 33, Hendrik Sedin. I have number 17 by the bed, so.
Right on. Well, what a disastrous week for hockey it's been. Or the last couple of days, should we say.
Pretty pitiful, yes. And I was actually at the arena for game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals, and they were showing it on the big screen. It's actually pretty cool. It's actually kind of a weird experience, actually, because they have the big jumbotron in the center of the ice, right, where you sort of see all the replays during the game. They lower that considerably.
Oh, good, yeah.
So it's a little bit lower. They don't sell tickets for the first bottom 5 rows, because it's too, like, you're right at the bottom, and you're, like, craning your neck the whole time.
Right.
And so it's about, you know, a good 15,000 or so, 15,000-16,000 anyways.
Yeah.
And they all get, you all get the towels, and you're waving the towels still, right? And
that's cool.
And all the concessions open, and you're waiting in line for the washroom like you do in any other game.
So weird. Yeah, that's kind of weird.
But the weird thing is that the energy level, though, it's quite high, and people are cheering, and everyone's yelling and stuff. It's kind of weird because it's a different feel because there's nothing happening on the ice. Like there's no, it's sort of like a con, it's like watching, I would think it'd be sort of like watching a rock concert on in a movie theater, you know, how sometimes that happens. I mean, documentaries are kind of cool anyways, regardless, right? Yeah. But there's no, there should be some interaction between what's happening in front of you, but there isn't because it's a TV screen. You know what I mean? Like right. I mean, you could be cheering so loud for this live show, but if the band isn't receiving it, I mean, you get it from both sides, right? You know, that sort of sense, right? Like, you don't feed off each other. Mm. And same thing with hockey. Like, I mean, with any sort of spectator sport, I mean, you're feeding off the crowd if you're at home with your home crowd, right? And you get none of that because you're just sort of watching it on TV. So it's kind of a weird, like, you're yelling, but you know there's nothing. It really means nothing. I mean, it means nothing anyways in some respects when you're actually in the stadium watching a live match. I mean, it means a little bit of something because it could be a good energy booster, but it truly means absolutely nothing.
And the Canucks, they can't hear you. They can't hear you cheering for them. It's kind of ineffective completely, right?
Yeah, you feel kind of helpless, and when you lose 4-0, you feel really helpless.
After losing 8-1.
Right, yes, thank you.
So let's count again. 12-1 over 2 games. You know, I've been hearing a lot of people being like on the radio, and I won't, you know, dwell on this, but all over the place, people are like, no, we're going to take it back in Vancouver. And, you know, they had a couple bad games. It's like, no, let's be clear. They had 2 atrocious, awful, horrible games. Where the team might as well not showed up.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's face the facts. Let's not have Sedin saying, well, you know, we were better than the night before. It's like, no, you weren't. You were not better than the night before. Yeah, they got less goals, but you didn't even get on the scoreboard.
Yeah, actually, and then they were saying, like, some of the commentary afterwards, like, actually, don't let the score deceive you because it was awful. Like,
yeah.
Canucks were worse than game 3 because
exactly. So I think that, you know, if this is a team that really wants to win, they're going to have to get a little more serious, because it's like they've shown that they can't even come close in their arena. So we have to win tomorrow, and we'd have to win game 7 because we're not winning game 6. It's just not going
to
happen.
Well, and we have to, like, I used to think, you know, when you watch the second and third rounds, you know, they were winning handily, and they were, you know, and I go, okay, this is maybe a different Canucks team who can, you know, not like the last 40 years, which is you kind of barely win or you lose big time.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happens in this round right now. Yeah. Right? So who knows? I'm still cautiously pessimistic about it all. it was pretty pitiful. But either way, it's been a fun ride. I mean, it was fun going to the other game when I was texting you, when I was actually there and in the third round when I won 7-3. I was like, that was like the best $256 I've ever spent in my life.
You know, and I'd say that's probably worth $256, you know? Like, that yeah. type level of experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars on tickets like you do on the finals and all. Like, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I'll spend a little bit more on a kind of a rare opportunity like this, so.
Yeah. It's not like you go every year.
I know.
But anyway, you have a big list today.
Oh, yes. And I guess we went straight into the Canucks, give all of the fanfare. We forgot to mention it. It's episode 42.
Yeah.
And we didn't say our name, so that's good.
So I guess we're, on average, about 8 to 9 months away from our 50th episode.
Well, we could look at this number and get recommitted to just doing it more often.
Yes.
Which is always possible.
We could hit 50 by December, I'm sure.
Let's give us ourselves that goal. Let's get to 50 by the end of the year.
Yeah, that should be no problem. We always have stuff to talk about.
And it's not as if we don't like doing this. I mean, like, we were talking about this before, right? At some point, you think it's a chore. Oh, we got to make time for this. No. I look forward to when we finally schedule one of these and get them done.
So. Yeah, and when people around us and they see us just gabbing like we are now, they always say, well, we should have been recording this, so...
Yes, like when we were at that wine and cheese tasting with the Groupon that we got at Steve's.
Oh, right, yes.
That would have been a perfect one to have a podcast, because actually it was really interesting conversation, all four of us.
And I wanted to apologize the next day, because I had a lot of wine, because...
Right, because I was driving, right? I only had two of my four things.
So Lloyd and I split yours, and we also split Sean's, because the other Sean, our other friend Sean, who was driving as well and who doesn't usually drink. So it's one of those things where...
Yeah, at least I kept two of my four. I mean, otherwise... Well,
I realized later that I was like, yes, but, that kind of thing. I just didn't want to... I'm sorry if I came across as very kind of like... pompous at any time or something.
Oh no! Well,
pompous
drunk. Well, yes, you came up pompous drunk.
Because you kept calling me Preston Manning, and I was like, "Oh God, I really didn't think I was, but maybe I do sound like him."
But the funny thing was that it was, well, one, you were terribly entertaining, but two, it was really true. You sounded very pompous, authoritarian, conservative. But what was coming out of your mouth was like, you know, flower power, granola, whatever concepts, right?
So yeah.
It was just such a fascinating, like, and I'm not even giving it justice. Like, we really should have recorded it.
Should have had the tape running. Because I remember there was one, it was about the medicinal pot.
Yes!
Because, and I was like, yeah, even for anxiety or something like that. I was like, if you need it that bad, if you need it every day, you should get a prescription for it, because obviously you have a problem. I don't drink every day. And so I was going on like that, right?
Right.
You know? So I always go on about those type of arguments. And you're right. I come across as very kind of, like I have an answer for everything, which the conservatives always do. Anyway.
Well, speaking of that, let's get to my... I was today, when I was visiting my dad, I had my little iPod Touch, and I put on a little note all the stuff that I thought we wanted to talk about. At least I wanted to talk about. The first topic, I rarely prepare in the last, number of months that we've done this. You've always had a list much more than I have, so this is the first time it's been reversed in a while.
Oh, that's good.
So the first topic was a good combination of what we've just talked about, which was your curmudgeon-y delivery with the Vancouver Canucks. And that's Stephen Harper flying out to watch the Bruins game in the Canucks the other day.
Right.
And it was funny, but it was like, oh, well, he paid for his own ticket.
Mm.
Oh, but the government jet was not, did he pay for that? Did he pay for the crew? Did he pay for the fuel to go to this hockey game?
Right.
And
I hear ya.
And so he's like, well, and Vesa was talking to me, she's like, oh, well, I don't think he's allowed to be on commercial flights,
right?
He's a private, is fair enough. So then, if you make that choice, then you pay from your salary the expense of that jet.
Well, and he has, I'm sure, a huge travel allowance, being the prime minister compared to even the other MPs, perhaps.
Yeah. But even so, I'd say you spend, like, he earns however, whatever his salary is as prime minister.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I pay for my own travel out of my own. Like, I go on vacation.
Yeah.
Like, if I went and watched the Bruins play and went on vacation, it wouldn't come out of my travel expense. I wouldn't expense it at work. Mm. I would pay, you know, like, unless he's going to meet the mayor of Boston to do some official business, and he just happens to be doing it at the game, then maybe you can qualify that. But otherwise, spend your income and pay probably tens of thousands of dollars to operate that thing, have the landing rights for the airport, pay the crew, pay the fuel, or you know what? Go watch it at home. You kind of have a nice house, I think.
You're probably right. Yeah, and, no, that's all valid. I agree.
But the funny thing was, Vanessa shows me this thing on her phone. Look, there's Stephen Harper. There's someone holding a Stop Harper sign, like the page behind him.
Are you serious?
And I laughed so hard, but it was totally fake because it was Photoshopped, because the gloves holding the hands holding the sign were the white gloves that the pages wear. So they took that photo from the page and Photoshopped it in like as if someone two rows behind Stephen Harper was holding it.
Yeah, because how would they know otherwise?
Yeah. And I thought, either way, that's a beautiful Photoshopped photo.
And he took his buddy, the Jason Kenney, with him.
Ugh.
Or I think, no, Jason Moore. James Moore.
Oh, James Moore. Yeah, okay.
Excuse me, I got the names wrong. But it's just, you know, it wasn't even just limited to his family or whoever. It was limited, you know. He brought his one of his conservative buddies with him. But you know, you got to get the guy thing going, you know, camaraderie. And
I mean, it's not as even if it's like a constituency thing. Because Vancouver, the city, didn't vote conservative really in the last federal election.
It's lame. And you're right. If he did something like Christy Clark would do, and actually arrange business first, you know, go for a business trip. Yeah, sure, taking the game.
Yep.
But go for a business trip, then that's one thing. But it's lame, and he gets away with it because he knows it's Canada's game. It's our national pastime. So he gets away with shit like that because of that. So anyway, I think it's bullshit.
Well, it reminds me of what leads to another topic, which is the whole the senatorial page who did that protest, right? The Stop Harper thing. And it was really funny because the whole reaction was on the government side or whatever side was, well, one of them was inappropriate or whatever. And, well, frankly, the person, the woman came up and did it in silence. It was a silent protest.
Yes.
So, you know, and what is it? Peter Kent. I can't believe how respected journalism fall into the most, like, they fall from grace so hard, from respectability to joke. Like, I think about Pamela Wallin, who's now in this as a conservative senator.
And Duffy.
And, like, oh.
It's disgusting.
Oh, it's awful. But anyways, Peter Kent's like, it reminds us about the security issues. You know, we have to, you know, in
Security issues.
For one, it's a cardboard sign. Or a paper sign.
Yeah.
Two is complete silence. You know what's a reminder of? It's a reminder of that we live in a democracy where things like this are acceptable and actually should be protected.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, so that's one thing.
Yeah.
And the second thing was like, what do you mean security? She didn't dress up as a page and then skirted through her credentials.
Yeah.
And, you know, and suddenly was there for the first time ever. She'd been working there for a year.
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with security because she's an employee. She has the right to be there.
Yeah.
So security is not even you just use security all the time, right?
I know. Overused.
And and so I was really angry because it's like it's like saying, "Oh wow, our faucet's leaking. Well, let's go change the roof." You know, like come on. Unrelated things here. But you know, and then I guess, you know, I mean, and it is a security issue if a year ago when this woman applied, she knew she was going to do this a year later. And she knew that the government would get a majority government. And she knew this and knew that. And she knew that, you know, it would be a full moon the next day or whatever crap. You know, and then she's forged all the employment documents. You know.
Yeah.
Then, yes, you could say it's a security issue. But what's the chances of that? I, you know...
She was being interviewed in French by some French station, and out of nowhere, like this was outside, the, you know, when she would just got fired or whatever, and they're asking her, yeah, do you think it was worth it? And then she's like, yes, yes, and all this kind of stuff. And then this guy with his briefcase walks by and says, cuts them off and points to her and says, you should be ashamed of yourself. Have you seen that?
Yes, I saw, I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
And his point was, you know, yeah, it's a democracy and we have the right to freedom of speech and, you know, standing up for whatever. But he's like, you chose the wrong venue for it. It's like very disrespectful or something. It's like, it's exactly the right form for it.
Yeah.
Especially, like you say, if it's a silent protest.
Yeah.
When I saw that picture, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I thought it was photoshopped. Like, I thought, right. You know what I mean? Right. Her just standing there in perfect, you know, position. And her looking so serious. And it's like this 21-year-old, you know, picking the perfect moment to do this. And you know, Bob Ray afterward was like, okay, well, you know, what do you think, it's disrespectful or not? She is exercising her freedom of protest, right?
Absolutely.
So I was kind of happy to see that. But I thought, wow, that was brazen. And I thought, yeah. Good for you. Because who would think of doing that?
Not me.
But it goes to show, too, that no one, like, older than that would probably think of doing that. The young girl,
yeah,
she's got this opportunity, and she took it.
Yeah.
And I thought, brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant stunt.
Yeah. Well, and I think just then, you know, what it says to me is that this woman sat there for a year in not even the House of Commons, the Senate.
Yeah.
And was so distraught by what she was seeing,
yeah,
that she had to do this protest a year later. So it doesn't say anything about, you know, democracy, about freedom of speech. You know what it says? It says that our system is broken and that someone who is witnessing it on a day-to-day basis for a year, and yes, she's young, yes, she's brazen.
Probably ideological, but, whatever.
You know, but, you know, shouldn't we all be that way? You know, like, it's not so much her as much as it is us, you know, not being that way anymore.
Too complacent, yeah.
And just, I mean.
No, I thought good for her.
Yeah, anyways, I just thought that was an interesting thing that happened this week. That I thought was kind of
interesting. It was great.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Because, you know, when it's happening, you know, you see the people on the sides in the chamber, and they're just kind of sitting there. You know, there's a couple looking at her, but a lot of them just didn't even realize what was going on.
Right.
What's next?
This came out today. I'm trying to not do all politics, but I'll get the politics stuff out of the way since you seem to string through it.
We love talking politics. An all politic podcast is fun. But anyway, yes.
The G8 report from the Auditor General came out today.
Oh!
I was watching the story, and they're saying, you know how during the election they were saying that the Auditor General, the draft came out. And
the draft,
saying, you know,
yeah, okay.
The full report actually came out today, and they're saying that, yes, you know, they don't know if anything illegal happened, but definitely $50 million that was supposed to be on border infrastructure went to G8 related legacy fund, which was basically doled out not by bureaucrats, but by Tony Clement and municipal mayors in the region around his riding. Doesn't and there's good. no paper trail on how those decisions were made at all. And
$50 million. So yeah. In other words, are you saying $50 million was spent just haphazardly, like,
yeah,
like, oh, let's just throw this money around and not back it up with any sort of documentation? Yeah. Well, I saw a headline where it said NDP stopped short of asking Clement to resign. And I didn't even realize that it was probably about that.
It was about that, yeah. So, I mean, I don't really have much to say about it. Just like,
it's just another little gray area, right?
Well, it's another, like, you know,
Oda.
Don't get me started about Bev Oda and the crazy voters of her riding.
Oh!
Yeah, I totally will vote in a liar anytime, every time. Every time. I live in Ontario. It's fine. Sorry. No, it was more like, you know, when you think about, like, the Liberal government gets ousted in some ways because of the sponsorship scandal. And suddenly there are the Conservatives doing pretty much the same thing.
Crazy.
You know, and...
Oh, 100%. 100%. That's what that was. That was money spent without documentation.
And that's why you have 21-year-old women who are pages putting up the stop... It could have been stop insert government prime minister's name. You know, like, it's just...
You know what's interesting about that whole thing is that, and even Bob Ray says the same thing as this young girl said. She's like, 60% of the population did not vote conservative. Those conservative values are not Canadian values, which I fully agree with. But it's like, but yet they have a majority. So let's look at why. It's because we have this, what they call it, first past the post.
First past the post.
I cannot use that argument of 60% of the population obviously don't want Harper. Well, if that's the case, then we should get a new way of voting.
Right.
Or this proportional representation, whatever it is, where it's like he won. Fair and square. He won. A majority. Obviously, there's millions of Canadians who wanted that guy in power, but... Yeah, I'm talking like I was when I was drinking. But yet 60%, not enough of them, of a majority in the popular vote, actually voted for his party. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Like, until we change it, we can't go around saying stuff like that as if it means anything.
Right.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I saw... You know, the first day of Parliament or something, and I can't remember what it was, whether or not it was the throne speech or whatever, and they showed the government, they showed, you know, Jack Layton as the opposition, and then they showed Bob Ray,
yeah,
and then they showed Elizabeth May. Yeah. And I thought, nice.
Yeah.
There she is, and I love it, but she's like... Just showing, giving herself as much legitimacy as she possibly can,
yeah.
Wearing her gigantic Order of Canada on her lapel.
Nice.
And you know how most people, when they get it, I mean, they don't wear the medal. They wear the little pin.
Yeah.
Right? And if I ever won an Order of Canada, I'd wear that pin on my pajamas every night. I'd be so proud of it. But she's the, no, I'm going to wear the big, giant medal, which you usually put in your drawer or... Maybe put on your toilet or something, you know, like you don't really show it, you don't wear it that often.
It's funny. But like a brooch.
Yes.
Well.
But good on her, I thought. That's the reason why you did all that, so you could get to say something
and
get coverage for it, so.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, I don't know. It's totally valid. She has the right to get up there and say as much as she wants. She had to wait until the very end of question period to ask her question. But yeah, I don't know. I don't remember where I was going.
My point. New topic?
Yeah, let's keep going.
All right, let's keep going. Biographies.
Oh, of course. Okay. So,
go ahead.
You are good at telling stories, and you're good at writing, and I think if you're going to attempt... an autobiography, if you're talking about writing about yourself or vignettes or whatever,
sure, yeah,
that's an autobiography.
Yeah.
So is this something you're thinking of doing?
Well, the topic came up in my head a couple of days ago. I'm sorry, I'm leaning away from the mic, so hopefully you've got that audience.
I always do.
Well, you know, and you know I've been distracted by a lot of things lately. And people,
yes.
Persons. And we won't get into that story. Although it is a fantastically interesting story with lots of twists and surprise endings. Ending, I guess. I was... What was I doing? I was on my Facebook, as I always am.
Of course, always.
And... she has a blog, and she was posting something, the same blog that she's had for a while for school, and that's just sort of her life blog, I guess, as she sort of moves into her employment world, and she talked about a biography, like, she has a portfolio online with all of her stuff, and there's a contact that I connected her to get some, you know, some networking or some tips about, you know, getting employment in her field, And one of the feedback, apparently, when I was reading her blog, was that, you know, she asked her, "Well, where's your biography? You don't talk about yourself, right?" And then she wrote a biography about herself, and I read it, and that was really fascinating and really interesting. And but it's funny because, like, you know, a biography on a website for your portfolio is kind of like, it's not your autobiography, but it's like, you know,
it's your bio,
5-6
yeah
paragraphs, right? And I kept thinking, well, you know, I don't know if I could even encapsulate myself in 4 or 5, 6 paragraphs. Or what would I say? You know, and a bio in that context is very different than a bio or your autobiography, right? And, you know, one of these days I'll write, I mean, actually, the novel that I have flirted with and wrote a draft of when I did a 3-day novel writing contest is kind of definitely semi-autobiographical. And I totally want to take another plunge at it. To sort of add more meat to it and change the direction of a bit. but that's another story for another day. But I just thought about sort of like, well, what are the, you know, key elements of one's life that you'd want to talk about? And so I was thinking, when I put a little status on Facebook and you sort of started a little commentary and Kev responded, oh, happy birthday, Kev, by the way. It's your birthday today as we record this. Happy birthday. And can't wait for my giant Kev hug on Saturday.
Yeah, I love Kev hugs. They're like the best hugs.
That is now our title for the episode. Yeah, I love Kev hugs. Okay, perfect. And yeah, so it just made me think about, yeah, biographies and what are key... I mean, is it key moments in your life, or is it key lessons you've learned, or...
Oh, I think it's everything.
Ethoses, you know, and...
It's everything. It's your theory about stuff. It's thesis writing, essay, / just picture it.
Like, if you were going to write your biography...
Yep.
I mean...
Like a book?
Yeah, like a book. About myself. Yeah.
Yeah, about my life.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you don't have to go through the whole story because it's, you know, 34 long years. 34.
34 now.
Well, yes. Well, happy belated birthday to you. It just happened a few days ago. And I can't wait to celebrate. I got an email from Karen and Sean, or Karen, asking if I needed a ride. And I said, hells yeah, because I'm not driving.
Nice. Nice work.
So we're going to celebrate on Saturday. Not to the same degree. Oh, we're going to have to edit that piece out.
Oh, what happened? Oh, it's just really loud, right?
That was just, okay, me screaming in my laughter.
It's all good.
But sorry. Happy belated birthday. Now back to topic, which is, yeah, like, I don't know, where would you... like?
Where would I start?
I don't know, I'm not going to say where you'd start, but what would be, like, you know you'd have to... That would have to be in there. Is it an experience? Is it a lesson? Is it...
Well, I think when people think of what to write, they think, what would people want to read about me? Like, what would draw people to wanting to read my story? And you can't pretend that that's not part of the process.
Good point.
Because otherwise, you just start writing and you just, it almost becomes like a diary. Well, you know, people like reading diaries of people who are dead.
Right.
You know, people who aren't around to even defend any of their claims or statements. Like, when the Queen dies, they're going to have a treasure trove of diaries to publish one day. It's going to be fascinating. Anyway.
Yeah, I want to read all about her sexcapades.
But I would think, you know, not saying that it's at all interesting to anyone in particular, but I would obviously write about, you know, my life, my family home growing up. I'd write about... obviously, you know, Elaine and I have been together for years and years, half our lifetime. So obviously that would have to figure into it, right? And our
maybe
dogs.
Maybe a few pages.
Talk about our dogs and, you know, work experiences. Obviously music experiences would be huge. You know, the things we enjoy the most.
Yep.
But I think also our thoughts on, you know, as we're big on current events and just things that make the world go around, like I think... I would throw a lot of that in there, you know, like my views on things.
Right.
And leave it for the people to, you know, figure out for themselves how they feel about that, you know? Because everyone wants to know what someone else's opinion on things are.
Right.
You know, it's sometimes even when they know it's not going to be the same, they're kind of fascinated by why someone would say something like that. Like, for example, when Sarah Palin messes up the history of Paul Revere, it to me it's like a train wreck. Like, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I can't even watch this. But then here I am watching it because I can't believe how awful she is, right? So it's things like that. It's like people want to know how you think about things and how that affects how you make decisions.
Right.
So that's how I look at it.
Well, it's funny though. Like, think about, I think it's really true. Like, especially people who are well known or pretty famous and important or for whatever reason. Like, in some ways, an autobiography is a way of getting into their minds and seeing how their mind works, especially if someone, let's say, as outrageous in her persona as a Sarah Palin, it'd be interesting to know what the mindset is behind there.
Yeah.
And actually, in some ways, more of a, like, I don't know whether you can get that real in an autobiography or it needs to be a biography, because in autobiography, people are just saying in a way they want to say it, you know? And so,
yeah.
You know, I think something like, more like a, like the biography that you've lent me courageously of Katharine Hepburn, which I'm still
fascinating
book. You know, what I love about that one is it's about someone documenting his many conversations with her.
Yes.
And that to me is a little bit more real than an autobiography, which people can censor their thoughts in there any way they want. Yes. Right. And this is point. Like, so I find that really fascinating. Right. Yep. So I like that approach a bit, you know, better, especially when you're thinking about someone who's pretty famous and you kind of would love to see what the inner workings of that brain, right?
But the other good thing about that Katharine Hepburn book is that, you know, she may or may not think that after she's gone one day that this guy might write something about her. She might have that in the back of her mind.
Right.
But not every single quote is going to be based on knowing that. It's true, candid. Because what happens right. sometimes are these, you know, kind of collaborative autobiographies.
Right.
You know, like one in particular, which I've read, which is a good book nevertheless, is this, there's this Paul McCartney book many years from now that came out almost 15 years ago. And it was a cool book. But the problem with that I found was that it was based on so many conversations that that author who knew him well from way back had with him. And so it was like, and Paul McCartney knew that his answers to these interviews would be directly right. published the way he wanted to word them, right?
Right.
It was about getting his word on a lot of issues that a lot of people have been asking about for years that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's good, though, in a sense, because you do want his point of view, but it's never going to be completely candid, like, and raw, right?
Right. So. And I think that's a pipe dream that you'll never get to. It's like a...
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you do it? Because our minds, we're human beings and we're flawed in that way. That will either have a little bit of ego that won't allow us to document in a certain way, or we want to, or people don't hear it the way we want it to be heard, and people won't read it the same way. Like,
yeah. Well, and the other problem is, like, in that case, in his case, he had a wife of 30 years that, you know, had the occasional interview, but she's not around anymore to be like, this is what he told me in 1975 about John Lennon. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
She's the only person that could actually really know that, which is kind of too bad. Because she never wrote a book. And we don't have, so far, we don't have diaries. We don't have nothing, right? Right. So I think it's the people who, like you say, are close to them, yet aren't book writers. You know what I right. mean? They just get all the ideas out. And therefore, you actually have a good idea of what these people were like, so.
Well, I think about sort of, and I've been on a kick lately, as you know, in my recent Facebook pictures, statuses
don't,
about...
Don't tell me about some of those.
Yeah.
I've seen them. Sorry, go ahead, I cut you off.
No pictures that will make me not run for office one day, don't worry. I've been going back on some of those old Bill Moyers, and I went back specifically to this one interview he did a number of years ago with Nikki Giovanni, the poet. And I remember that was probably my favorite interview he's ever done in that show, just because hearing that interview going, gosh, you know, I want to have a drink with that woman.
Totally.
You know, and she read, which is her poem, Choices, which is Bill Murray says was his favorite. And I just love that poem. And apparently Oprah loves it too. So even so, although I did watch the last Oprah episode, and I thought it was kind of interesting to watch. And it was that's another topic for another day, maybe. Or maybe the end of the podcast if we have time. But I just loved it because it was, and I don't want to recite it here because I'd never do it justice, but maybe we'll send a link to it or something.
We should read poems, by the way.
Yeah.
That raised a good point because Bill Moyers, he has his guest. Sorry, I'll just intervene for a second.
Sure, please.
Like Nikki Giovanni, who reads these poems, and they're so awesome. And they're not like the average poem you come across. They actually make you think. And we should try and get into that, I think.
Cool. You know, maybe in one of the next podcasts, I'll read that one and you can read something.
Yeah, really, let's do that.
Yeah, and we'll try to stretch out a bit in different format. So. Because I love the poem so much, and maybe I'll do the analysis now, and then, you know, we'll read it at another podcast. It's just, she says it in such a beautiful way and describes it in such a very sparse, perfectly imperfect way about the imperfections of humanity.
Yeah.
About how choices and having choices and having to make choices to compensate for the imperfections of mankind is a necessary part of being human because we're not perfect. We sometimes have to settle, often have to settle.
Yeah. And we have to hurt.
You know, and it just, you know, that kind of compounded with sort of thinking about, you know, 10 years of my dad and his experience and his, you know, dealings with his circumstances in a way that, you know, is unfathomable to most people. And me finally seeing it for that. And I hadn't thought about it. I've never really been an ego person, but you do think about how things affect you. And for many years, it's been about how my life has been different since my dad had his car accident. Last number of months I've been thinking, you know, it's not about that. It's actually, if people say, you know, and I've been saying this often because a lot of crappy things have happened in all aspects of my life for the last couple of months, and you know, you've had your share of crappy things happen within your sphere too, and I, you know, I keep talking about survival. You know, some people fight like cats and dogs, just trying to fight for what they need or what they deserve, and some people just survive it and learn to adapt, and both ways are equally valuable, right? And I would always say, you know, I'm a survivor. I'm definitely not a fighter. That's not what I do. I survive and I adapt to things. And I've always wondered where I got it from. And I'm like, well, of course, I get it from my dad. Mm-hmm. You know, about, you know, I mean, he's, you know, dealt with his physical circumstances, his mental brain injury now, and has done it in many ways with a lot of grace and humility and rolling with the punches, but it's him receiving in a reciprocal way everything he's put out into the world before. You know, he was always that, you know, jovial quality human being, and you know, he was a dad, so there's always, you know, tough things about being a parent and all that sort of stuff, but you know, always a charmer, you know, and he raised us right, and I think he did, because we did what we needed to do, and the supports around us, we mobilized all of that, and everyone else is there to be supportive, and it's just a beautiful way of how the whole world kind of works and makes it happen, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna sort of, it's hard to say this too, because the medium is kind of not the best one. But I was at a conference. I was actually hosting, helping to facilitate a conference from our work in the last couple of days. And one of the consultants we work very closely with, she was saying that you know, she was. I was telling her about this and this realization, and I'll link it back to biography at some point, I'm sure. But but she was saying that, you know, life is not. It's sort of like a dance. You're always moving forward, and it's sort of like, you know, you pick things up along the way, but you keep moving and dancing and moving forward and see where the you're nodding at me and looking at me because I'm sort of moving like a lava lamp a little bit in this chair, right?
I get what you're saying.
But you get it, but you can see it. So people who are listening just, you know, it's sort of like walking a tightrope, right? Like,
right.
you got to keep adjusting.
Yeah.
You can keep moving forward. And that's a better visual for people on the radio. People listen to
his moves, which is now.
Yeah. But it, what it reminded me is that really is probably one of the better visualizations to describe life. Because you do have to keep moving. Like, whatever happens, you keep moving forward. Mm. Like, you're not dealing with stuff standing there. You're continually moving forward. You got to drop some stuff. You got to pick some stuff up. You whatever, you know, the wind blows or whatever. But it's a constant forward motion that reminded me sort of in some ways the beauty, if you can do it gracefully and humbly, that survival instinct, right? Because you'll always move forward. You'll always get to where you need to go. And sometimes sometimes part of survival is fighting a little bit, right? But also part of survival is knowing when to not fight. Just kind of go, you know, that's beyond my control. And you got to take it like a man or take it like a woman or whatever, you know, and just figure it out, you know, and swallow your pride or whatever it is you got to do. I don't know, and it sort of reminded me of like one of the key things. When I think about biography, you know, like it's a key lesson of my life that I've learned quite a bit, you know, and you know, some people talk about value statements or story, you know, I have stories that unpack all of these kind of things. You know, I think about, I've been able to articulate as 6 things in my life that are important that if I was going to do my biography. I'm sensing I'm talking too long, but
no.
I'll get into this because I kind of wanted to document it because I've been saying it to a lot of people, a lot of important people, in various different contexts of my life. And as it came in a conversation when someone says, you know, what are my values? You know, what do I value in life? And someone I was talking to had a whole mind map of values, right? And that's how he needed to arrange it, and it's made sense to him. And whether or not all of them or some of them I agreed with or didn't agree with, it doesn't matter. You know, in some ways, your values are your values. I will never and can never judge, you know, your values or my value or your values compared to my values, because they're just yours. It's all personal, right? And we're having a conversation about values, and I said, well, I'll show you mine, right? And I don't even know I call them values. I just call them things that I've learned along the way that I find they're important, and whether or not they're important in relationships with a significant other, or relationship with friends, or relationship with work, or a hobby you have, or whatever it is, like all or most things kind of need to apply for it to really resonate and hum along in a very, you know, perfect way, you know. And one is always trust, right? And actually, you know, Nikki Giovanni, is going back to her, she sort of said, you know, there's 2 things in life. There's balance and trust.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said, I'm like, wow, I've got 6. Maybe it is just 2. Maybe everything, balance is everything else combined. And then trust for me has always been 1. Like, you got to trust people.
Yeah.
You know, and if you...
Without that, then there's like nothing.
Yeah. And if you start, if you don't trust people, then that's not a good thing. And I've seen it fall apart all the time. And sometimes people give away trust too early than others, and, you know, that's all debatable. But trust is such an important connection to have with, you know, anything that you have, right? And then Nikki says, you know, balance, and everything else kind of could fall under balance.
Yeah.
Although I think there's one that doesn't. Like, but for me, there's things like, so there's trust, there's, you know, there's, to me, I was actually started with 2. One was being heard and belonging. To me, like, I started with just those 2 things, you know, and I think I've probably said that to you before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have to feel that they've been heard. Mm-hmm. Not just listened to, but heard. Like, truly
like registered. Heard. Yeah.
Yeah. And belonging. Like, I just think people just need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
I think just I feel I need to belong all the time. Like, I love the music I love because I feel like I could belong in that world. Like, you know, I have a house that I have and live in a home because I think I belong there. And people, I just think it's a universal thing for most people. And then there's that trust, right? That trust that everyone has your best intentions at heart and vice versa. You know, that's a bit of a very optimistic Pollyanna thing to say, but I have to cling to that because I just do.
Well, it's one of those things that moves you. It keeps you moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, one thing is being heard and the other one is understanding, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm mixing these all up together. I'm not really being articulate because I haven't really articulated six as six before. So, but you know, but I think there's a difference there because I you can hear someone, but you may not be able to understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that next leap that's important. I don't know if they have to agree, but you have to understand, you know, like, and that's where I find myself, I falter so much because I always drive for that first. That's my thing. I always try to understand, like, you and I rarely disagree, but we disagree on some things.
But when we do, we get the other.
Yeah, and yeah. I try really hard to understand where you're coming from, you know?
Yeah.
And what I love about our connection and our relationship and our friendship and why we continually do this podcast is because I trust in the fact that you also want to understand my point of view. Mm-hmm. And where I failed many, many times is not realizing that there are very, very few people who will strive truly to want to understand the other point of view. You know, and
that's true.
And I get disappointed all the time in many situations and circumstances. And not to say disappointed in a detrimental way or whatever, but sometimes in a way that's detrimental that I don't like the other person or the other or whatever. But it's just like I have such a high heightened sense of that, mm-hmm. and I think you're pretty close to me in that. Mm-hmm. And I expect for some reason that high bar for everyone, and that is impossible.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
And I figure, fuck. Yeah. And I continually get disappointed. And that's my fault. That's partly what I have to... That's a burden and something that I have to wear and figure out how I deal with that. But it's leading me to whole other realizations around career development. But we won't get into that on this recorded avenue, this stage. And the other one is attraction. I think attraction is really important. I said this in a work context about these things that I learned. And the person said, oh, I never thought about attraction before. But it's true.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be attracted to your work. You have to be attracted to the activities you're doing. Not everything, but if you had to just say in a holistic way, like overall
way, yes.
And you know, and that sometimes you can't define by categories or principles or values. You just got to be drawn to it, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking about sort of where I want to take myself next year or so. I talked a little bit about that on Monday at our wine and cheese. And I'm being really drawn to it. Hmm. Like I really am. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if someone told me like that's totally not the right thing you should do. It's you really should do something else or whatever.
Screw them.
You know, partly
sorry, but I can't even be receptive to someone saying something like that. But anyway.
And, well, you know, I would graciously receive that feedback, but whether I would actually, you know, take it to heart. But I hear myself, I can feel myself leaning into this desire right. and this attraction to just taking that next step in my life, taking down that path. I think it's going to happen. I think I said to myself, September 2012, I better be doing what I said I was going to be doing.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see that. I can feel it now. And that's why I know the timing's right, even though I've been thinking about it since 2003, you know? So.
Sometimes you do feel it. You feel when that change is about to happen, even before you enact it, you feel right. it coming.
Well, and it's not as if I didn't have that attraction before, and why just humming and hawing it. And sometimes you need some aspects to fall apart to really start to see it, you know? And that's true, too, so... But anyway, so that was sort of where my mind started to go when I was thinking about this topic of biography, you know, like important things. What would you want to say to people? What do you want people to know about you? And,
right.
And so those swirled in my head in that topic.
Those are all good concepts. And I think they appeal to and relate to a lot of people. Like, especially those main pillars that you were talking about, you know?
Yeah, pillars. That's a good way of saying
it. Just because I suffer from that a lot, I always think the same thing about, you know, that understanding thing. It's like, no, like, half the people you talk to at any given moment aren't really going to have the attention span or the... They'll feel that they don't have the time to really digest whatever you're saying, right. You know? And sometimes you can go blue in the face, like, huh? Don't you think? You know? And it's just not. Because it doesn't appeal to them to necessarily... Like, it, for example, might not appeal to them to even go that way, right?
Right.
Because they already think a different way about it, or they're just not interested.
Yeah.
And sometimes what I'm learning is kind of what you were talking about is... I think there's, you know, when people think, you know, there's so little time in the day, and I think now, like, what we think about during a day is almost so compartmentalized, you know?
Right.
You actually only have a certain, if you have a job, and you have extracurricular activities, and you have family and friends, it's like, okay, well, your whole day is divided up in all these different things you got to do, and during those times, you can probably imagine how many thoughts that come to your mind where you actually end up putting off thinking about it.
Yes.
And I think that's just a constant organizing that's going on in our minds, right?
Right.
Because I think, but in other ways where it can work is sometimes when you are doing something and you think of something else and you want to actually do that other thing more, sometimes it is a matter of putting down what you're doing and shifting gears because it's the only way it's going to get done. It's like,
right.
It's like, oh, I have so many things to do in a day. How am I going to get it all done? It's like, sometimes you just got to try and get it all done.
Right.
Because if you have, say, an afternoon where you have got nothing planned, the chances of you actually enacting on something that you've saved for doing, you probably won't end up doing it.
Right.
And that's what I think about a lot of things, you know? So it's like when you think of people that you're trying to connect with in a certain way or relate something to, their mind already is in so many different directions a lot of the time.
Right.
Because they're dealing with whatever's at hand, their a task at hand, plus they're thinking two steps ahead of, you know, what they're doing that night, yeah, or what they're doing the next day. And it's just, it's sometimes like, I talk to people, could be around our building, or it can be, you know, out on the street or whatever, and I think, holy, that person had just... It just went through one ear and out the other.
Right.
You know, and they have no idea, no way of understanding where I'm coming from because they're not feeling my sentiment about it. They're not feeling how it's affecting me.
Right.
And it could be in a good effect, an effect in a good way or a bad way.
Right.
But they're just not meeting me there. And it can get disappointing.
Yeah.
It can get kind of, and I think, well, no, because they're thinking of going to yoga or, you know, they're right. They're not in that headspace that I am.
Right.
And sometimes I get disappointed because I might feel really strongly about like a song, like mm-hmm. where I want to sing it, you know, and someone around me might not really want to hear me sing it.
Nice. That's true. Maybe. I don't know.
I might feel so great about a movie that all I want to talk about is this movie. And people are like, yeah, I've seen it too. It's not a big deal. So I get a lot of this kind of, like, lack of enthusiasm, maybe, about things. Because if I feel really enthusiastic all of a sudden, it's almost like an endorphin high. It's like, oh,
yeah,
I really want to just recognize this moment, you know?
Right.
And when people don't share that, sometimes you're kind of like, damn, you know? Like, why couldn't they just, you know, understand where I'm coming from or something, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know. Those are a bunch of things that what you said made me think of.
It's interesting because when you say that, like, I think where I think it works in certain contexts. Like, I think my drive for understanding is really interesting and it works perfectly well in a work context, but it serves me poorly as an individual in my personal life. Because, you know, when you're saying, yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone and obviously that person's got their tasks at hand.
Yeah.
You know, they're... job stuff, family stuff, whatever, a thousand different things going on in their head, right? And so you could be saying something and they just, the way their circumstances are, it's just not going to register.
Mm-hmm.
And what I draw to always first is I always get this, I don't know where it I really have no idea where it comes from. This is not from my dad. It's not from my mom. Like, I have no idea. My first inclination is, oh, okay. What is going on in Sean's life? What is his task at hand? Where is he distracted by, you know, the building? Or what is his favorite song that he's just really wanting to sing, but he just can't sing? So I can't tell him about whatever I want to talk about because he's just distracted by all those things. And I ask questions, and I do whatever I can to try to unpack that and understand that.
Yeah.
And you first.
Yeah.
And after that, it's all done, and you maybe sing your song, or you, you know, do whatever you need to do, I feel so satisfied that I gotta understand where you're coming from, where your headspace is, what your life is all about, what your backstory is, and what all that may lead to your perception on this topic or something. And then I'm like, whew, that was awesome. Great. Now it's my turn. And then there's silence.
I know.
You know? And no one is nowhere near as interested as I am about, well, what's the shit going on in my life? What's in front of me? What song's in my head?
Yeah.
And where is the perspective? You know, and maybe sometimes people will ask a few questions too. And some people are better than others. And you know, I'm not sometimes the best at articulating it either. So you have to be patient because you have to talk it out quite a bit. And it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And then they either, you can just tell they don't get it, or they're not listening, or they're not hearing. Sorry, they're listening, but they're not hearing it.
Right.
And, you know, and this is, you know, not directed at one experience or whatever, but this is holistically for years I've started to realize this. And I'm like, wow, I got to use that talent in my work context a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And, but try to really remember what, just what's important for me in my personal life, because in the end, everyone's just looking out for themselves in a global statement, I guess,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so if I am not, at least in some way, trying to temper my interest so much about everyone else and start to actually be interested in me and what my perspective is on stuff, then that might be helpful, you know? And so I had lunch with a university friend of mine the other day, and I sort of, and this is when I started, had this epiphany thinking, my God, I am, you know, I always talk about balance and always somewhere in the middle, you know, like it's not left or right. It's sort of down the middle somewhere. And I'm so far on one end of the spectrum. And most people are either midway or way on the other side. I'm like, I'm this lonely guy over here on the other side. And I'm like, crap, I got to get myself back to the middle somehow. Mm-hmm. And otherwise I'm going to like get taken advantage of in certain circumstances, which I'm sure I do get, you know, and not to say you need to change who I am, but I just need to know how to use this innate interest in different ways, kind of thing, or in a more appropriate settings, I guess, you know. Anyways, like, I'm rambling. I have no idea where it's going, but it was a fascinating thing that's been in my head lately.
It's totally interesting, because sometimes you ever notice when someone's talking to you and you can actually find yourself totally wrapped in what they're saying?
Mm.
And you think later, but you're like, you know, I was totally more than happy to be in their world for that time, right? And it's amazing when you get that back. And someone gives that back to you. And to me, that's a sign of a true friend, you know? Someone that you care about like does that. It's amazing. It's so reciprocal.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not for some reason, it's because, you know, there might be something wrong, or you know what I mean?
That's the thing. It's reciprocal. It doesn't have to happen right away, one after the other.
Yeah.
But it
feels...
needs to happen, organically. But it has to happen both ways.
But it has to happen. And it's, sometimes you think, wow, like, I forgot about myself for a while. And that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
To you know what I mean? Because you're so wrapped up in your own bullshit all the time.
Yeah.
And to just be able to just... not think about yourself and actually let someone else into your head for a while, like, it can be really rewarding, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when it doesn't happen the other way around, you feel really cheated. You know, because, you know, I've, it sounds really weird to say, but, you know, I've come across people like that. Like, I'll never, you know, be specific, but you've come across people where all you get is tick, 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 and it's just and there's no way that you're getting that same level of attention when it's your turn.
Right.
And to me, that is one of the biggest, like, people don't think too much of that, but it's one of the biggest problems, I think, in just interrelations between people in general. Yeah. It's just, if you, you know, some, I know I can talk a lot sometimes. I think sometimes I
guilty as charged here.
Yeah, no. You know, I think, oh God, I just talk their ear off. But then it's amazing when someone, like, the way they look at you, and you can tell they're following you every step of the way. And it's truly yeah. remarkable. And I think we've lost a bit of that. I think just in general in society, like, especially mm-hmm. Western society. I don't know if that's really lost in a lot of Middle or Eastern societies.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something tells me maybe not yet. Mm. And I think that's sometimes why there's that reaction against Western society a lot, because we're just so into our bullshit, right? Like, our gadgets and our, you know, and our whatever. It's like, those are useful tools, and
iOS 5!
Yeah! I know! Believe me, I know. But, you know, like, it's just taking the time to just be like, oh, wait a second, I don't have to check that email right now. It's like, let's take this. I think we feel that time squeeze mm-hmm. more than ever, you know, of, okay, I can only think about what you're saying for about like 2 minutes, and then I got to get back to, you know, I know people not consciously probably think that way. And it, yeah, it's just weird, because we just can't stop staring at computer screen or whatever it is. And or the TV or whatever, video games, whatever it is. But we're not actually engaging. It's like, I love the fact that on Facebook, you know, we can actually make contact with so many different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing. I love how we can do that. But I love, like, talking to people on the phone. Mm. You know, like, we'll call each other.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a few other of our friends we'll probably call. But, you know, on my phone, it's like, I'll call Elaine. And I'll call you, you know, and then sometimes I call Kev, Steve, you know, Tara. I phoned Tara the other day.
Nice.
That was great, you know, and it's always those reciprocal yeah. conversations.
Yeah.
And that's what makes us such tight-knit group, right?
Yes. I'm thinking about that too. Oh. We were talking about this with Tara a little bit at our last, when we were at Kevin Susie's for the big dinner, and she was saying, like,
yeah.
You know, I was talking, I started this, the initial thoughts of this conversation was starting to germinate in my head. She's like, but that's what's great about our group, is that we're all like that. And it's like, it's true. Like, I, not to say that we've got the best group of friends, but we kind of have the best group of friends. No, you know,
weird,
like,
yeah.
It is just so exactly reciprocal, and there's a lot of understanding, a whole lot of trust. You know, trust so much that we're going down October 2nd.
Ooh, I can't wait.
I can't wait to go down to Seattle again. It's earlier, eh, this year, isn't
which
it?
I like. It won't be so freaking cold sometimes.
But I guess we won't get the same sort of Veterans Day or whatever, flyby right. kind of thing.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But guys, weekend in Seattle. I cannot wait.
Good. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It'll be our third annual, really, right?
Third annual. I love the sound of that.
So I'm really looking forward to that. Elaine and I have booked a couple other little small trips in around that time.
Okay.
We booked a trip to Whidbey Island.
Oh!
Over Labor Day weekend.
Nice.
Just did that today. Or yesterday.
Nice.
And we're going to Hawaii in October.
Right. And that's like after, the week after, right? Yeah, okay.
That all worked out. And We've got our camping, and a week after camping, and this is back in August, backwards. We got this group on for Whistler weekend that we're acting on. So I'm kind of excited. Yes. We're doing all these little mini trips, which
yeah,
are sometimes like just as fun as the big ones.
For sure.
You know, I kind of like the kind of like the 3 day thing. I'm back at home, you know, because I love, you know, we're in Paris for a couple weeks. I always revert back to that just because it was by far our biggest trip together. But, you know, it was amazing, 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 amazing. But of course, even after a trip like that, I was excited to be on that plane home because I was like, I get to be at home, you know. Yes. I love being at home. It's a weird thing. But
well, I think the art of the weekend trip is kind of diminishing as well, and people need to reinvest in those, because my sister and I were just driving somewhere, and we were just seeing this, and we were just parked at the light, and there was a bunch of parked cars on the right, and there was this, you know, small, you know, family of three or something, packing a station wagon full of stuff, and it, like, they were obviously going away for the weekend, right?
Right.
Little weekend trip.
Yeah.
It reminded me, I said to Vanessa, and she's like, you can tell we're related, right? She was saying, and she had the same visual in her head when we were eating dinner one day in Greenwich Village in New York City, and there was this sort of couple, you know, they had obviously borrowed a friend's car, because no one in New York and Manhattan has a car, right?
Right.
And they were packing it up, they were going somewhere for the weekend.
Yes.
And it's just that excitement, you know, like, huge. Yeah, leave early Friday, come back Sunday. It just is a wonder of that small escape. And I think that's why, you know, the people are so stressed out in our world these days. And, you know, because people aren't taking those weekends away.
Yeah.
I mean, spending a weekend away from work is good. And but a lot of times you spend it like, oh, mowing the lawn or getting the laundry done, getting the house cleaned and doing this or that, and or just doing nothing. And there's nothing wrong with doing nothing. It's also very an important thing to do. But it's something tiny recharge about going away and spending a couple of nights somewhere else, you know, which I find it's just so beautiful. And I'm so glad you guys are doing that. And I really had to take advantage of a Groupon to make myself do that at some point in my life.
That's what I love about those. Yeah.
I saw one about 55% off of sensuality lessons. That was today's really? Ethical deal.
Are you serious?
And I was like, say what?
You're like, yes, please. Right on. I ethical deal. I don't know. I don't know if we're on that one.
I get an email every morning. But anyways, we are 1 hour and 6 minutes into our podcast, and I think we're doing well. And I got everything out of my list except for the fact that I wanted to gloat about getting now 38 movies at three locations of Blockbusters as they go out of business here up here in Canada.
Yeah. Jeez. I got 3. You got 30.
I had 35 when we last spoke, and then I bought 3 more.
You got 3 more, okay.
I bought Rear Window. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Oh, Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I picked that up. And, yeah, and I forget the two other ones that I got too, but yeah, I have 38. And Vanessa just picked up 2 more that we wanted. So,
wow.
We are doing well.
You're going to have tons of movies to watch.
Yeah, you don't see the Tower of Discs on the
no,
way.
No, I didn't even. I want to see which ones you bought. I just want to put it into 2 categories, ones I've heard of and ones I haven't.
No, there's actually more categories in there. There's ones you've heard of, the ones you haven't, the ones you may have seen the trailer for.
Yeah.
The ones that you kind of recognize the actors from.
Right. Wow. Like, just faces, no names. Faces first, and then there's the lesbian section.
Yes, there's a few where I'm like, oh, well, the description looks interesting. Yes, I was saying that the other day. Like, I've got a subcategory of lesbian films. I have some music documentaries and stuff. I also have a Paul Rudd collection going.
Excellent.
And, and
movies are good.
Single fathers with children.
Right.
That's another subcategory I have.
Awesome. Well, that's good. That's a good way to end it. People can think about what you may have bought.
Yes.
And maybe we'll reveal on the next podcast.
We'll read poetry down. And then and we will list the 38 movies I have.
Reveal movies. And I will reveal the 3 that we bought.
Okay.
And 1 video game, which is just some driving thing. 3 movies.
Actually, I'm already looking forward to the next one, because I really do want to brush up. I want to practice reading this poem, and then I'll film.
You read one of those. Sorry, we'll end this in a second. And I'll read one by Robert Bly, another poet that he had on.
Cool. Awesome.
I think that sounds like a good plan.
Perfect.
Okay, well, thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes, and you can also find us at www.thedotmatrix.com. So, sayonara, peace and love.
Yeah, and all that jazz.